Ernest will be back with us shortly.
All right, very good. Welcome to the Media Bits Power Hour. I am back. We're delighted that all of you are here. This is a monthly conference call that we've been hosting every single month for the last 15 years. Jed and myself have been working together on these calls for the last 5-plus years. We have done a wealth of calls on a wide variety of topics and a wide variety of subjects that are specific to publication success, whether you're a newspaper, a magazine, direct mail, website, e-newsletter. If you're in the advertising sales space, you are on the right call. Today our call is a bit more select because our topic is a bit more select, meaning that we're working primarily today with the presidents and CEOs and owners of companies. Most of our calls anybody can participate in because we cover a variety of subjects and points, but today really is about those at the very highest level of leadership within your publishing company, because when we're talking about the selling of publications or the buying of publications, that's a bit more specific. Jed, how about some opening words to the group, and then we'll roll in here.
All right, great. Well, thank you all for joining us. I want to thank Ernest for doing these calls. He really has an enormous amount of knowledge and experience when it comes to all things related to print publications. MediaBids help sponsor these, and we are a newspaper and magazine advertising sales tool. We give publications the opportunity to use our online system to sell ads to advertisers that they otherwise would probably not know about. So if you want more information or would like a demo or to learn more, please feel free to give us a call or visit our website. Again, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much, Jed. And for those of you who know Jed and MediaBids, they provide a wonderful service. They provide additional ways for your publication to bring in additional advertisers and revenue. And they are wonderful to work with, and they work with our publishing clients very, very closely. So, Jed, thank you so much for your support for our calls and the topics and all the work done behind the scenes with your team as well. It's really a pleasure. My name is Ernest. My company is Power Hour. I've been in the publishing sector since the mid-'80s. I launched my company 15 years ago. I am a business coach and business trainer. We work with about 700 or 800 publications in 8 time zones around the world, just like we're working here by conference call, by phone, and by email. We also have a recruiting division. We help our clients find great people and company and individuals find great places to work together. We have an investment banking group. We know how to buy and sell publications. And then we also have a very deep SEO and web sales strategy. In other words, we help our clients make money with their website. Okay? So very good. We're going to get rolling here. Jed, there's just a little bit of background noise. Do you hear that on your end?
I don't.
Perfect. Now we're cool. All right. Very good.
Maybe it's me.
we're golden. Okay? So, again, as we're rolling along, if you have specific questions, we have 8 pages of questions. So we're going to share some content and field questions. And by the fielding of the questions, we'll also be weaving in some of the things that we want you to know about today. We also will field any of your email questions, so you can send those to ernest@powerhour.com. or just hit reply to the confirmation or the reminder that got you here, okay? So we'll weave those in during the course of this. The topic today is titled Steps for Selling or Buying a Publication. The steps move back and forth, whether you're looking to buy or whether you're looking to sell. So as you're making your notes here today, it's not an accident. We want you to make lots of notes throughout the course of our program because you will learn more and you will take away more. And there are steps in here. There's 3 key points that we're going to cover. The opening step, the first point is, what is the pre-work you must and need to be doing today, even if you are planning on selling your publication over the next 3, 5, and 10 years, okay? So by definition, just the fact that you're here tells me and tells us, Jed and I, that you're leaders. And you, and as a leader, you're thinking about the future. So whether you're thinking about today, tomorrow, the next day, or a decade, or 50 years from today, there are steps and things that you want to be doing that prepares you if you're going to sell your publication to earn a premium. Okay? By the way, that premium can mean as much as $1 million or $5 million or $10 million more, or even $100,000 more, depending on the value of your publication. So it's worth playing for. And we get later into the program, we start to talk about multiples and multipliers. If you get a premium, you might get a multiple of 5. And if you haven't done the job, you might get a multiple of 3. 3 versus 5 could be the difference in $1 million or $500,000 or $10 million or even $50,000, depending on what you're playing in, okay? So it's worth playing for. You're playing for a lot. But here's the key piece. If you show up on my doorstep 8 years from today or 8 months from today, all right, and you say, Ernest, I'm ready to start my publication. And I say, beautiful, I've got some questions, which I'm going to roll you through right now. I've got some questions for you. Do you have this in place, and this in place? Oh, Ernest, God, we always thought about that. Oh, Ernest, we don't have that in place. You know, gosh, we never took the time to do that. I'm going to say these words. That's fine, but you won't earn a premium. And that failure to put the steps in place can't be rebuilt. You needed to be doing that as you were running your publication. You can't roll back the clock. None of us can. Okay? If we talk about building a sales database, you can't magically have a database appear of 20,000 prospects for your publication. But a buyer is going to want to know if you have that. And if you do, you get a premium. If you don't, you don't. And unfortunately, on that day when you're ready and you show up on my doorstep and you ping me a note and say, today is the day, I want you to be prepared. And it starts with action, and the action relates to the things you need to do, meaning today. Okay? All right. The other piece to recognize is that putting in these steps, if you were looking to buy a publication, let's just reverse it on the other side for a moment so we have the right framework. If you're looking to buy a publication, these are also the things that you're looking for behind the scenes. Okay? So let's begin from the top. Number one, these are sort of in not a descending order of importance. There's kind of a wide variety. There's not really a formatted structure as much as these are the questions that we look for. So first off, for example, is your company name and your domain name in alignment? What a basic concept, right?
Right.
My company is Power Hour. My website is powerhour.com. Not PH Hour or not power-hour, but powerhour.com. May seem like a small point, but in the world of sort of a digital footprint, you got to get it right. Okay? Now, and related to that, is your company name trademarked? Have you taken the time to trademark your company as a brand? Jed, if you wanted to buy my company on the day I'm ready to sell it, I'll pull out the paperwork that says, here's my company name, here's my LLC, here's my domain that lines up. Oh, and by the way, here's my federally registered trademark that goes back to 1995. Not only am I proud of it, it took a lot of time to build, but everything's in sync, Jed, in a nice, clean package. For all of you with your publications, have you gone down that path? By the way, if you go down the other side, all right, and you've ever been challenged because you're using the name of a publication who is a competitor, you know the problem that can create. Jed, I don't know if you've ever had those examples with publishers and publications.
Yeah, I mean, it's trademarks, as you mentioned, are incredibly easy to file, you know, inexpensive, pretty quick, and they're valuable to have, you know, because it's sort of just putting a stake in the ground, you know, it's easy to deal with when you're first beginning or when you initially do it, but it's much harder if you have to fight with someone.
Correct. Or if I were coming in, Jed, looking at buying your publication, and I had my attorney do a little research, and I find that there's five conflicts, I may be buying your asset. Your publication could be around for 30 years, and I might be concerned that I might be challenged.
Right.
Okay? So that's a really important part. Let's continue. The next point. Do you have a sales database that is current and accurate? This is what we were talking about, you know, a few minutes ago. That is, it's accurate with your advertising clients and prospect information. I have an ACT database that I use to drive my company 15,000 contacts from the first hello that I opened up my company back in 1995. Everything's there. All kinds of information, conversations that I've had, city, state, zip, phone numbers, email addresses, websites, and it stays current and it's available to our entire team. And all of my team feeds into that database. Whether you use ACT, Goldmine, Salesforce, it doesn't matter, but you have to have information that a buyer will be interested in. Let's go to the other side. If you come to me and say, Ernest, I really want to buy this publication in Montana. Beautiful. Tell me about their sales database. They don't have one. Beautiful. They're not earning a premium. It's very clear. Cut and dry. Yeah, but they think they could patch one together in 90 days. No, that's not what we're looking for. We're looking for a continued relationship and dialogue. For those of you that are on this call that have a sales team, all right, that they're feeding into the database, you have to inspect what you expect. Okay, pre-sales databases, my sales teams in my publication days, I had 60 sales reps working for me. They had three-ring binders. Jed, the most basic, three-ring binders, A to Z.
Right.
Sorted by company. Every 30 days, their binders would come in, and I'd read them. I took out the red pen. I felt like I was in third grade, but guess what I learned? Some did better than others. And guess who did? Guess who sold the most? The ones who paid attention to the database. Conversely, if that sales rep left, I could take that binder, Jed, and I could hand it to Mary, who's brand new, and go, Mary, welcome to your world. Everything's here for you. So you see, the things that we talk about related to the buying and selling of a publication also help your business get healthier now and be stronger. So don't think that these feel like to-dos or tasks. You want them for your business. I have a wealth of experience about CRM programs, what goes in them, how to inspect them, what kind of reports you want. You know, just please know that this is more of a checklist as all of you are listening here. Another key point related to that, how strong is your presence on LinkedIn? Huge. We've done entire calls about LinkedIn in the past. It's really important to play in LinkedIn. It's where your business decision makers are, sector by sector. It's not just to get there and get connections, but there's a whole strategy about how you participate in the LinkedIn groups. A wealth of work to do there, and that whether you are participating in groups or do what I do and my company does, we own groups. Okay? We own and participate in 60 groups. In a couple of keystrokes, we can reach out to 200,000 to 300,000 people in our sectors and in the world that we participate in. Okay, and each of you have your own unique strategies. Okay, Facebook is more personal. LinkedIn is where business people play. Next point, your e-newsletter. We've done entire calls about this. Every 30 days, the readers of your publication need a voice from you. They need an email newsletter, period. Jed, we've worked on this for years. We've done entire calls about e-newsletters and the importance thereof.
We have.
Right? You know how I feel about this. Okay? This is, again, if you want to sell your publication for a premium, all right, then you have to have this piece in place going out to the readers. Then, on the other side, an e-newsletter each month that goes out to your clients and prospects. If you want to earn a premium, let's go the opposite. You come to me and say, Ernest, I want to go buy a publication in Calgary. Beautiful. Tell me about their e-newsletter. Are you kidding, Ernest? They have 30,000 readers. They get something once a week. You know what I'm going to say to that person? You're going to pay a premium for that. It's worth it, and they've made an investment. And then we'll carry it from there. Okay? So e-newsletters. Do you have, next point, okay, do you have strong search engine optimization and a revenue stream at your website? All right, search engine optimization is how do the search engines find you, all right? And then the revenue stream is how are we serving our advertisers at your website? So things like average number of pages a website visitor is viewing, average length of time on your website, and the impact this is having on your advertisers. These are the kinds of things that a buyer is going to want to know. Conversely, if you're looking to make an acquisition, you're going to want to know that about a publication. Cuts both ways. Jed, comments or thoughts related to that?
When you when you're looking at a publication's digital versus print, mm-hmm. do you expect there to be sort of different balance sheets for different segments mm-hmm. of their business, mm-hmm. or are you typically looking at sort of one general sort of accounting of things with you know not necessarily differentiating revenue streams?
Yeah, a couple things. Of course, we're always going to look at the rolled up, you know, revenue look. But then, yes, we're going to want to see what the print revenue looks like, separate from the e-newsletter revenue, separate from the website revenue. So the answer is yes, we're going to want to see how that's lined up. We're also going to want to see if there's packages being sold. For those of you who are, you know, have worked with us over the years, and many of you on this call have, you know the passion and focus we have for, you know, we sell print, we sell e-newsletter exposure, and we sell website. We sell that bundled package, okay? And conversely, if you're looking to make an acquisition of a publication, you want to see if that company organization has it in place. One of the many untapped revenue opportunities is that you might find a traditional print publication that hasn't done anything with their e-newsletter or their website revenue streams, and quite honestly, that could be a very nice revenue stream that you can light up and turn on. Does that answer the question?
It does. And is it important to have these things even if they're not big profit centers yet?
Absolutely. Keyword is yet.
Right.
Okay. There's not a publishing company or publishing group that we don't work on all three aspects. Okay. And even if we can't monetize it all, depending on the sector or the category, we're still doing it. We still have our newsletter. We're still working on our website. We're still selling that in a bundle, you know, because we realize that some industries, you know, are not as progressive, and some are more challenging, you know, economically, you know, to drive revenue. But we have others that are just making money hand over fist. It depends on what sector, you know, that, you know, for example, if we're doing something that's business to the medical center, there's an endless pool of opportunities. B2B, very strong. B2C, you know, business to consumer and individuals, a little more challenging. You have to kind of work on that model a little differently.
Right.
All right. So let's continue. A couple more points. We look at the closing ratio between the number of presentations that are given in a given week. For example, do you have a dashboard? Can you see how many presentations this week versus the same week last month or last year, or this quarter versus last quarter? You know, what number of presentations are being given, and of those presentations, what is our success ratio? If we give 10 presentations, do we close 10? Do we close one? How come? Okay, you want that information for a buyer because it talks about the success of your sales training, sales staff, and how successful your story is out in the marketplace, how well you're being received. Who are your top five clients or even your top 10? Here's an interesting piece. And what percent of that does that represent of your total revenue? We sometimes see publications and publishers where 20-30% of their biz is just kind of gathered around 5 or 7 or 10 advertisers. You're actually more vulnerable. If one doesn't renew or two doesn't renew, that could be a pretty big slice of the pie. Doesn't happen often, but if you're in that case where you sort of feel like you've got 3, 4, 5, 7 advertisers that are really a big part of your revenue, you've got to broaden the base. That is a very vulnerable place to be, especially in these economic times. Okay? We need to look at your competitors, and we want to make certain that you are very clear. We've done entire calls, Jed, as you know, on media comparisons. Okay? How do you compare to other like publications, websites, newspapers, direct mail, radio, TV, other media options? You have to be able to articulate that. But more importantly, if you can present that side by side for a buyer in 8 years or 8 months or 88 years, doesn't matter, the reality is that why don't you use it today? If your team were using a media sales comparison, all of our clients do. It's the only thing that we sell from. We don't even need a media kit. We don't even need a publication. We sell from side-by-side media summaries and media comparisons because it lets a buyer realize the strengths of what we bring to the table and where the obvious holes are in terms of competitors. Okay? So once again, you're going to have to do this on the day you look to sell the company. Why not use that tool today? Why don't you increase your closing ratios from 2 of 10 to 7 of 10? Why don't you increase your renewal ratios? Because advertisers are staying longer because you're very clear on the cost per thousand and what the advantages are and your circulation and your distribution advantages. Okay? Jed, any comments or questions related to these points?
Well, let's say someone's listening right now who doesn't do any of the things you just mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And they're saying to themselves, okay, I want to sell my publication at some point in the future. How far in advance of trying to sell my publication do these things need to be in place?
Mm-hmm. Yep, a great question. It depends on which one. Okay? I mean, you know, for example, you can add SEO, right? And you can begin seeing it impact in 90 days, all right? But you can't go fabricate a client database if you've been in business for 2 decades.
Right.
You see what I'm saying?
Right.
So, you know, quite honestly, for those who are here, you're leaders. We hope that you'll take many pieces, and ideally all of these pieces, and assign them varying timelines and tasks and roll them out to your team and present what it is you want to accomplish because you want your team to win today. All right?
Right.
The flip side is if you want to sell your company in the next 6 or 12 months, Jed, there are things you can do now. All right, but for example, let's take, for example, the packaging of print and an e-newsletter and a website, okay? You can tie that in, and you can roll it along, and for the next 6 months, you have a track record. But 6 months is really not 18 months or 24 months or 36 months.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So a buyer's going to look at that and say, yep, see the potential, but you know what? It's only 6 months. Who knows where that's going to go? I'm not really willing to pay a multiplier for that. And they'll actually break it off if you try to kind of cram a lot in the end before you're getting to the finish line.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And a buyer, as you and I know, is not buying on the potential. You might be doing $1 million and believe it's a $10 million biz. Guess what? If you're not doing $10 million, you're not getting paid for that. Okay? Let's pause. Again, we'll field any questions. Just send them to Ernest at powerhour.com or hit reply to the reminder note. And I'm going to tuck in a variety of questions here, if I could, Jed, because we've got a fistful of them. So let me just roll along. Ann asked a question. What is the best way to approach angel investors? And the response to that with angel investors is you need to have all of this in place and a really well-baked business plan. Okay. Anytime we're working with publications, it takes us somewhere between 2 to 4 weeks to put that plan, to put that story together. It's very comprehensive. Angel investors are a lot more sophisticated than many might expect. Angel sort of sounds like, you know, they're your angel, like just sprinkling money at you. That's not the case. They're very savvy. They're very smart. They've been very successful in business, and they're going to ask you way more questions than you might have expected. Okay. Dave, you asked about should you market your business or yourself on LinkedIn. 100%, Dave. And we do an entire training program related to how to utilize LinkedIn. It's a weekly training program. And then how to leverage the groups and how to participate. It's a very, very important strategy. Let's see. Another question here. David asks, what's the possibility of selling a publication to a larger publishing entity? The answer is good if the fit makes sense, David. So it is a good fit. Whenever we look at helping a client sell a publication, we do go look at some of the nearby potential competitors. Then we go look at smart strategic alliances, you know, that would make sense. So, for example, if you're doing a home improvement and there's a house and garden publication, there could be kind of a nice synergy, so that's good. Let's see. We have another David. We had David in New York. David in the Carolinas, who says, with the economic downturn and business off, how far back can you allow for evaluation of a possible acquisition? David, that's a great question. Buyers are going to want to look at the last 12 and 24 months. That's to their advantage. But there, if there's a very compelling story, you can roll it back further. Beyond, you can go back 36 and 48 months, but it's very, very tricky, okay? In part because we do so much work helping our clients with the buying and selling, we can sort of bring that kind of umbrella of understanding to a buyer. They may or may not buy it. Some do, some don't. But at least we can step in and explain, here's where we're at, here are the reasons why, here's what the economic downturn has meant. That also goes in the presentation book, so he sort of handles that objection, David, up front. It is a little tricky, though, I have to tell you, because publications, Jed, as we know, are generally sold in the sort of 12 to 24 months, you know, going backward.
Right.
Let's see. I've got another question here from Margie in Texas, who says, when determining readership for a sale, can you include online readers to an open website? The answer is 100%. Margie, in fact, when we're working with clients and showing them about cost per thousand and these side-by-side media sales summaries, we literally have three lines. Here's our print cost per thousand. Here's our print plus our e-newsletter cost per thousand. Here's our print plus newsletter plus website cost per thousand. We actually break out three unique lines that reflect that. And so the answer is, can you use it today and sell with it? Yes. Can you go on to add that into value for your company? 100%. Okay. Let's see. I'm just rolling along here, Jim, with some of these. Stan in Pennsylvania says, what are some of the key differentiators from a buyer's perspective of similar publishing companies available to quite key? Stan, easy question. You're hearing them right here. We're rolling along, and I've got another half dozen more, so we'll tuck those in. That's a great question, Stan. Let's see. Gloria asks, should the focus be on the print version or digital? Gloria, you have to do both. I mean, have to do both. You really have to tie in the electronic side and the traditional print side, okay? So, Jed, that was kind of some laser questions that came in from the 8 pages. For those of you that we fielded those questions, if that's helpful, let us know. If you've got additional follow-through questions, just send an email to ernest@powerhour.com, and we'll work and weave those in, okay? Jed, anything as I was rolling along spark your thought or spark a question before I sort of share another half dozen more things to be prepared for?
No, I think, let's keep going.
All right, cool. All right. So additional things. We look. A buyer is going to look at your renewal percentage. So if 10 ads come up for renewal, do you renew 10 of 10? Do you renew 1 of 10? What are your renewal percentages? Speaks to the health and wealth of your company and business. Conversely, if you're looking at a publication to buy, you're going to look at that. Let's also not skip over the obvious, your distribution and circulation story. What sets you apart from the best? What sets you apart from the rest? Your whole story of subscribers, readers, pickup racks, all the different components. There's going to be an entire piece and a very meaty piece about what sets you apart and the way you get your message out, you know, for the benefit of advertisers. Here's another one that many people don't think about: length of the ad agreement. Okay, so Jed, if I come to you and you want to sell your publication, I say, Jed, how many of your agreements, if you've got 100 advertisers, are 3 months versus 6 versus 12? And you say, oh, Ernest, forget about it. We're golden. We have every single agreement is an annual agreement. Beautiful. You get a premium for that. If I come to you and say, but Jed, you have a second publication. Tell me about the contract length there. You say, Ernest, there's nothing more than 3 months. 100 advertisers, but they're 3 months. What does that say?
Right. They're not going to be around for a while.
Yeah. There's going to be a lot more turnover. Think about that intellectually as well. If you have 100 advertisers that are all on annual agreements, you have 100 renewals, right? If you have everybody on a 3 month, you have 400 renewal moments. Okay?
Right.
That's not a fun place to be. Here's another one, really key. I learned this when I was back in my corporate days. Our company was acquired. We grew it from about $20 million to $100 million, and my company was acquired, and the Wall Street Group came in and said, tell us about the ad drop report. We want to know who's adding and dropping. In fact, we'd also like to know how many of those advertisers, your full-page advertisers, are also in your competitor A, B, and C. We want to see what the market share is, and that drove market share reports. So market share means if you have 100 advertisers and there's 200 total that are possible, you're 50% of the market share, okay? And you can use that data today. But of those 100, how many of those 100 advertisers that you have are in one competitor, two competitors, or three competitors? That tells you about what mind share. So market share versus mind share. This tells you what mind share, how valuable your publication is. So if you've got 100 advertisers and every single one of them is in all three of your competitors, that just says you're just like everybody else. If you have 100 advertisers and 90 of them are only in you and 10 are in one other competitor, what does that say?
Right, that you're that much more important.
You better believe it, that you're significant in their mind, that you are the go-to source and resource in publication, okay? So these are all the things to think about when we're talking about doing this kind of prep, okay?
Ernest, just real quickly on the contracts you mentioned and making them for an extended period of time, is there much of an issue getting those to transfer? I mean, from, you know, the existing company to what presumably is a new company?
Oh, you mean the advertising agreements?
Yeah.
None whatsoever.
Okay.
Yeah, none whatsoever. That part is not a challenge. And, in fact, in some cases, acquisitions are made and even the company name remains the same and even the ownership name. I mean, you try to keep it in tandem. In other cases, you know, the buyer's prerogative can come right in and can change whatever they want. You know, hey, if I'm going to write the check, I'll do what I want. I can change the cover. I can change the website. Yeah, that's fine. You want to write it? As long as I'm getting a premium, you can do it anything you want. And as long as you're not paying me over a period of time. Now, if we have a deal where you're writing a check at the table and you're writing me a check every year for the next 5 years, no, the rules are different. Until I get paid out, you can't make those categorical changes.
Right.
Okay? We just got a note in from Bill. Can you list the steps and resources for trademarking a publication's name? Bill, it's a great question. I would suggest you reach out to an attorney who specializes in trademarking. I have two that I like to do a really good job. But the bottom line is you want to work with an attorney that really understands trademark rules and how to get it done. And it generally runs, Bill, about $1,500 to $2,000. There are some things that you can do yourself, sort of some self-serve stuff or self-service stuff, but I'm not a big fan of that. I like to get it done right and get it done right the first time. Okay?
And at the end of it, you'll wonder why you paid $1,500 for it, because it's a pretty simple process.
it is until you sort of get in that process, the back and forth, you know what I'm saying, with the trademarking group, and they have questions about it. And there's some specifics yet about what you're trademarking and how to position yourself. But you are right. There, some of the internal steps are sort of simple. Let's talk about number two. Okay, what can you expect as the seller of your publication in the buying process, and in reverse, what should you be looking for as the potential buyer of a publishing company? This comes right, cuts both ways, and we just wanted to give you a little quick capsule on some of the things that go on behind the scenes. Okay, so typically NDAs, non-disclosures are signed behind the scenes, and from that, then a 10 to 15 page business and financial summary is created, what we call, again, a book of business, okay? It becomes the presentation itself and the story related to your company. Conversely, when you go to buy a publishing company, you should expect to see or receive one. In many cases, when we get rolling and we have clients that want us to help them go buy a publication and that person is not prepared or doesn't have it in place, quite honestly, that tells us sort of out of the gate their level of, you know, how much prep they've really done as well, okay? The next piece is that when we're, and I'm just going to talk for just a moment from the selling side, when we're working with someone who's selling a publication, and we go out into the market and we say, look, we think there's 10 or 15 or 20 opportunities, we always want your approval first. So you need to sort of bless and approve the companies we're going to go out to. And then even once we reach out to them and bring them back, you're going to approve them again. So it's important to recognize that if you're a seller, every step of the way, you're in control of the process. Okay? There are no surprises, so to speak. And quite honestly, as a neutral investment banker, when we go out, we're able to sort of shroud who is selling their publication. Many people sort of ask about that, the element of confidentiality, and we're able to do that all the way through the step before we finally say, okay, look, you know, Mary, you want to sell. We've gone out and found these three companies. Here are the three. Do you approve it? Okay, great. Let's get all of the non-disclosures now buttoned down, and then from there, then we begin to take the steps going forward, okay? So the other piece, too, is that buyers come from not just your neighborhood. Buyers come from, depending on your publication, and, you know, depending on what your goals are and the goals of a buyer, buyers come from all over the world. And with this keystroke in the Internet, my gosh, we're able to broadcast that that a publication is available. We're able to go out to more than 100,000 publications and publishers and advertising professionals and leaders and so forth. You never quite know. You might say, well, gosh, I'm in, you know, Des Moines, Iowa. That's okay. We might find, Tim Jones in Singapore that has family there or always dreamt of living there and has an interest, and we'll, you know. So we move a lot of things by email and by conference call, and then once things finally get a little more serious, then, of course, that, you know, the buyer will travel in. So don't think that selling your publication is just around the corner. You might get a premium from a strategic buyer. For example, if you're in the 50-plus space and you have a publication in Iowa, there might be a publishing group that is in 10 cities or 10 states across the U.S. or in 10 provinces across Canada, okay, that really wants a fit and wants to use Iowa as a jumping off to go get the rest of the Midwest. So there's a whole host. Never quite think that, you know, sort of what's around the corner are your best prospects. Quite honestly, the world is a bigger place and there's a lot more opportunity from that perspective. Jed, anything to add to that?
Well, I guess one question is in your experience, is who typically is the prime mover here? Who's making the initial contact? Is it the buyer or the seller?
Clarify that.
So, in other words, do you find that it's more common that a publication decides that it wants to solicit buyers, and then they go out and find them through mm-hmm. someone like yourself or whatever other means, or do you find it's more common that a publication will get an inquiry from an outside company when they typically had not been in the market to sell?
Oh, I got it. Probably 75-25. On occasion, those on this line and those who didn't think about selling might be contacted by a buyer, if that's your question, about a fourth of the time. In general, buyers go looking for sellers. Sellers go looking for buyers. You know, I mean, let me say it a little differently. You live in a home. I live in a home. Generally, nobody knocks on our door to buy our home until we put a sign out, right? Okay,
right.
But there are cases where people come knock on your door and say, God, we love your home. Just here's your name and number. If you ever were thinking about selling your home, we'd love to have an opportunity to buy it.
Right.
Okay? So, but that's sort of rare. Think about your own homeownership examples and how many times people have knocked on your door saying, you know, if you ever want to sell.
Right.
So those are the things to be expected behind the scenes. And then once things progress a little further, we've met face-to-face, we've begun the review of the process, then an offer is made. And the offer is made contingent upon deeper due diligence. Okay, so they're going to be presented a book about your company or in a book about that business. And then there's going to be a variety of meetings by conference call, questions that might move back and forth by email, face-to-face meetings, all of those things happen. And there's going to be an agreed price contingent upon the due diligence. Because you have to think about this. You're not going to open up your business on a real granular level until you know that there is a price and a range and a deal that you're willing to do. If, in fact, we can agree to that part, then we can peel it back and go a lot deeper on the due diligence side. And contingent upon the due diligence, then the deal is actually struck. The other piece to think about, and then we'll pause and field some questions here, is that there's always a handoff step, okay? And there's no perfect combination. What we know about putting deals together is that every deal is different and unique. Some buyers will step in and say, thank you very much, Jed, you're golden. I'll run the biz from hello. Others will say, Jed, no, you're the man. I got to have you here 6 months minimum. And it's written right in the agreement. I want you here Monday through Friday. I'll pay you a salary. I'll pay you a back-end bonus, and we're going to run this deal. Okay? And there's every other combination in between. There is no perfect formula from a buyer or seller transition perspective, but you do want to anticipate that there's going to be some kind of transition, and you want to be prepared for that. Okay? And then conversely, if you're looking to buy a publication, think about what kind of handoff and transition you would want from the person on the other side. Let me tuck in a couple of questions here. Jed, let's see. Gilbert in Texas said, will a net cash flow of zero kill a sale? Gilbert, the answer is tough to sell without net cash flow. People will not buy based on, a what-if, so that will be tough to do. Let's see. Dave in Michigan asks, when is it better to start up a new pub than purchase an existing pub? That's a good question.
It really is.
Yeah, that's a tough one. Dave, you have to balance it. I'm not going to give you a categorical magic wand on that one. It's situation by situation. I think you've got to go through all the key points that we covered on the first page. I think you have to ask yourself, is this a business we're already in? For example, if you're in Iowa and you've got a horse publication and you want to take it, you know, to Missouri or Kansas, fine, you're already in that biz. You know that. You know, but if you're a horse publication and you want to expand into, you know, horse training products, that may not be a world that you have as much fluidity. And if you wanted to expand into an automotive and you're in the horse, you know, biz, that may not be as, you know, easy as well. So I think you have to take that on a case by case.
It's always surprising to me. I agree with you. I don't know how you even begin to sort of make mm-hmm. the calculations for that mm-hmm. because it's always surprising to me that companies, like large newspaper companies, which are sometimes the easiest to see with their acquisitions because they're publicly traded, like, you know, companies like Gannett or Gatehouse, you know, they will go into a small town and buy a publication that has what appear to be relatively little resources. And they would rather do that than start their own, even though they could start one in an afternoon,
mm-hmm.
you know, but they really see yep. value in buying the existing product.
Yep, absolutely. Here comes another real-time question. Steve is asking, we have a print magazine, a successful website. I'm reading this quickly. Several inactive domains that complement our trademark name. Yep, the domains are, yep. Three or four others that we did. How much added saleability? That's a great question, Steve. Those emails that are parked. Now, I've got an entire search engine, website, revenue team. We have 10 people that do nothing but help my publication clients do that kind of work. Steve, you would be, if you want to add a premium, you don't light those up. By the way, nobody will pay anything, literally, almost, nearly nothing, zero, for just parked domains. There's no value to them. Secondly, you could light them up and just point them to your current website. Okay, that's one strategy, and that just means that they're out there and they're available, but that's not going to add a premium. The real way to add a premium is to go light up these as individual websites. Okay, but they cannot be duplicate content. So you cannot take what's on your primary site and waterfall it across five websites. That will absolutely decimate your SEO. and the websites will actually, the search engines will actually blacklist you if you do that for any sustained period of time, and that would be majorly detrimental to your current website. Okay, but you can take what you've got with the ones that you've got here, and then you could create small websites, begin to do some optimization with them, and begin to add more value to them, and then you actually have a really cool asset that you could say, look, at our main website, we pick up 10,000 readers a month, but on these five, we pick up 5,000 times each, we pick up another 25,000 more here in addition to the 10 at our main website, and that could be something, Steve, that would be very, very doable and very cool. Okay, but that's the strategy, again, that you don't light up 6 weeks before you want to sell a publication. Okay.
And by providing links to your primary website from the secondary ones, it also really helps the natural search listings of your primary one.
That's exactly correct. There's all kinds of link strategies, backlink strategies, and then once people come in, complete forms or fill out, you know, email information, then that can come right into your team. So it just, it's kind of like owning a flower warehouse and then a flower store in a town, and then you open up four or five more, and you sort of have the warehouse rocking, your main, and then you've got all the other, you know, smaller stores, and it's just a beautiful combination. So, Steve, thanks for that question. That was fantastic. Let me roll through here because we're going to pause here in about 6-7 minutes. So let me roll through the third portion, the terms of the deal, and I'm just going to give all of you some broad understanding and stroke because every deal is different. Okay, that's the key piece to take from you know, our call here, that every deal is different and there's no perfect plan because each plan is uniquely crafted. Okay, but the things that are going to be considered, you know, in all of this, the terms of the deal and the due diligence and how deals are structured and the valuation and so forth, you know, what's going to be looked at is, you know, financial reports 12, 24, maybe 36 months back, a review of your advertising agreements. Please be certain they're airtight. There is nothing worse than a conversation that I'll have with a publication that goes like this. I'll say, how many advertisers? And they'll say 100 or 500, whatever. I say, great. Tell me about your agreements. Everybody has signed agreements? And I get this long pause. Well, we're kind of old-fashioned. Well, it's a handshake. Well, they're month-to-month. Well, they're – no, that's not the answer. Every single advertiser has a signed agreement, 3 months, 6 months, 12 months. 4-8-12, whatever it is, has a signed agreement. If I come to buy your publication, let's reverse it for a moment, and you tell me you've been in business for 30 years and you've got 500 advertisers or 5,000 advertisers and all in a handshake, you are not getting a premium for that. Now, by the way, you're going to get an earnout. I'm going to say, look, I got to be honest, Jed, I'm a little skittish here. I mean, they may have loved you for 28 years, but they may not love me. I could go in and lose half those ads.
Right.
So guess what? I need you involved for the next 24 months, and I'm going to pay you over the next 24 months as I get a level of confidence that those advertisers will stick and stay. Okay?
Right.
Office leases, AR, AP, payment history from key clients going down the list here. Percent of revenue to print expense, to sales team expense, to overall and total expenses. Know your ratios. Know why they go up and down. Read your financials and understand what's happening in your biz. Economic conditions and trends in your area, if you're geographically based, or economic trends in your industry and sector, if you work in a sector and you cut across geographical lines, okay? So those things have all got to be, you know, tied in here. Who are your top 25 largest prospects? Okay, who are the largest ones? Where are they? How come we don't have them? And then, of course, the time for making a smooth handoff and the valuations and the multipliers. And there's a lot of questions about multipliers. And let me just – and ranges, okay? A couple things happen with publications, okay? So the first thing is we do what's called recast financials. We take a financial report and we say to the person who's selling, remove out the things that are personal that you've run through the biz. By the way, we say the same if we're looking to buy. Take out the things that won't be happening. Now let's also break out – what you pay yourself. If you pay yourself $500,000 a year, but if it really would only cost me in wages $100,000 a year, then I'm going to pull out $100,000 and I'm going to show truly that there's $400,000 that would be recast, okay? So we have to work through that, all right, and really understand what you're pulling out of the biz, and then, of course, you know, what's left over. And then from there, there are industry multiples and multipliers. Now, we spent a lot of time working in the publishing space. We have seen publications sold for a multiplier of 1, 2, 4, 7, 9, 10. The range is as big as the rainbow. You say, Ernest, how do I earn a premium? How do I get to a 10 or a 6 or a 4 rather than a 1 or a 2 or a 3? you work on the things that we talked about at the beginning of this call. If you want a big payday at the end, then you've got to have your house in order. And how do you get your house in order? Not on the day you want to sell it. Not a single buyer is going to pay you a premium unless you have those pieces in place. And conversely, if you came to me and said, let's go buy something on the other side, we'd say the same thing. Do they have their act in place? And if they do, beautiful. Then it is worth the premium. If they don't, then it's not. Okay? So very straightforward from that perspective. Okay?
Hey, Ernest, how often do people get all of this stuff in order and then realize, maybe I don't want to sell?
Sometimes. Yeah, and so, you know, honestly, when I first have a conversation with any publisher that wants to buy or sell, I ask them, why are we here? What brings us here together? Are you sure this is the time
right.
that you want to sell? Or tell me why you want to buy on the other side. You know, because frankly, I want to do something that's in alignment with what their goals are. And we as Power Hour and our team and our company, we want to make certain that, you know, it makes sense from that perspective, okay? I am going to rattle through just a couple of questions and then we'll pause. Let's see. Doug asked, how do you assess value on a publication where there are absorbed costs from other departments, from the parent company, graphics, electronics? Doug, no worries. You break that out. That's called recasting financials. All of that gets broken out. It gets explained, and a buyer will get and understand that, okay? Pamela says, if a publication that's been on the streets 28 years, does that have more value than one that has been on the streets for 5 years? The answer is yes and no. Life expectancy of a publication is only one criteria. The sun does not rise or set based on that factor alone. There are a lot of other variables. Patrice asks, is it a bad idea to carry paper on the side of your sale of your publication? Patrice, yes and no. It depends on who you're carrying paper with and what the criteria is. And that's really the key piece, what the criteria is. Because, for example, you could have somebody come in, Jed, take over a publication, run it in the ground, and pay you a multiple of 5, but based on a smaller number.
Right.
Okay? And then cash you out and then grow it back up again. So you have to be very careful on that, Patrice, from that perspective. Brian asks, is there a difference in valuations for different types of direct mail publications? Yes, there is, and you've got to be really crisp on what the on how you set yourself apart from the rest and who is in your competitive footprint. And direct mail, you've got some really big players there. One more. Hillary asks, what is the typical sales structure, outright purchase, financing, or combination? Hillary, all of those combinations are possible. Clearly, what you would like is cash on the table and you're done, and clearly what a buyer would like is to pay you over time. So somewhere in the middle becomes a negotiation of putting a deal together. Okay? All right, Jed. Wow, that was a lot of information. That was wow. Let's pause. I'd love you to say a few closing words to the group. We'll pause and then open the line until the top of the hour for some questions. Okay?
All right, great.
So please.
Please. You know, thank you, Ernest, for another enlightening teleseminar. Thank you all for joining us and. Hopefully it was worthwhile for you, and look forward to your questions. And, you know, if you're interested in MediaBids and like to learn more about us, we are always available at MediaBids.com or give us a call, and our phone number will be in the follow-up email.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Jed. Always a pleasure to be working together. In summary, this is Ernest with Power Hour. It's been a delight to be with all of you here today. We're going to pause our recording and then open up the line informally. So, Jed, just give me just a second.